The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
A beer at the track is the perfect match.
To be able to wear the World Championship stripes here, it's a really proud moment for me.
Everyone says Ilio Kees is the best, but that's not true. Kenny DeGatel is the very best here.
My grandfather used to ride here a lot, and now my father as well. So, yeah, you can say it's in the family.
Wearing a sweatshirt that announces you as a Mark Cavendish fan.
Mark, on Wednesday after the Tour de France, he came to Deins at 2 meters with Peter and his four children. So that was the day of our life.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are outside the Kuipke track.
Can you spell that for me, please?
It's Q-U-I-P-K-E. It's a tricky word for English speakers to get their tongues around, really, because it's very Flemish. But it means the tub, basically. And it's the name of the track here in the Citadel Park in the centre of Ghent, or not far from the centre of Ghent. It's a fairly unassuming building, isn't it? It's sort of not quite Art Deco, not quite Brutalist. It's a sort of expo centre with a little velodrome, 166-metre track, very steep-sided, hence it's called the tub. It is like a washing machine drum, and when the crowd is in and the atmosphere is hot, it's like a steaming bowl of Flemish stew, isn't it, with lots of meat in the middle.
Well, hopefully not too steaming tonight. The crowd's streaming in. We expected, we heard that ticket sales had been relatively low, so we weren't sure how many people to expect here on opening night of the 6 days of Ghent, which is what we are here for. It's freezing cold. It's that kind of cold that really kind of gets into your bones. So we're standing outside at the moment, and the crowds are queuing to get in, and we're looking forward to going in a moment for some great racing here opening night, and some star names. Well, Lionel, here we are in the track centre, all very familiar and pretty busy, and we've just watched the first race of the main event. The men's 6 days of Ghent has got underway. We had the under 23 racing earlier on, and it was a team elimination race.
Yeah, a really hectic event. All the teams put both riders in, and it's Madison Hansling every 2.5 or 3 laps. And every 10 laps, the last team over the line is eliminated. And, there was a little bit of an upset because I think the crowd wanted Kenny DeKetteler to win, but it was actually Yuri Havik who won the race. He gave it the big point to the sky for winning that particular round, and a great reception from the crowd. Which over there in the expensive seats, a little bit empty because I think they're enjoying the VIP food and drink out in underneath the stand. But up here in the cheap seats, it's a really good turnout.
A really good turnout, yeah. And pretty full in the track centre as well. We saw Michael Morkov and Lassie Norman Hassan introduced to the crowd at the start as the favourites for the whole race over the 6 days. They were fourth in that race, and Ilio Kaisa and Mark Cavendish lasted another 10 laps before they went out. I was standing here on the bend, and we're very close to the riders here. You can hear them thundering over the boards, shouting at each other. I did catch a little yell from Mark Cavendish towards Ilio Kaisa at one point. And you get a real sense here, and the people doing the stands too, of, it's such a tight little track. And you're so close to the action that it's a really kind of privileged vantage point we have.
Yeah, I mean, we're standing at the steepest point of the track, and it really does rise up in front of us like a wall. I mean, it's an incredibly steep banking at each end. And the other thing to comment on is that the programme is incredibly tight. There's barely any pause for breath. The team elimination event finished. There was a bit of a lap of honour for the winners, and then it's straight into this flying lap. Two-man time trial where they wind up the pace, and then the rider in second position sets the quickest time he can over the final lap. and the racing just goes on and on and on until, as I say, that break in the middle for the kits, the cheesy entertainment, which, Richard, you're going to stay in the track centre for, I think.
Oh, I can't wait. Architects, Roy Peterson.
Voor wie stond het verhaal? Wie gaat doors? We gaan het zo met u weten. Het is helaas over en out van Jonas Rikaerts en Sim van de Geen. Out of the race. Door Rika Dilje.
What did you make of the Bradbrust?
Well, I'm still picking it out of my teeth. I know, it's still there. Ask me when I've finished. It's really like the French Revolution, isn't it? No, it takes a long time to clear from the mouth. It was very nice. I mean, the choices are pretty limited, aren't they? It's bratwurst, a hamburger of dubious provenance, or sort of like Flemish pizza type thing. So, yeah, bratwurst is the most substantial meal, and I quite enjoyed it. I'm not sure if it's really compatible with your new slimline look, Lionel.
Well, I allow myself a treat. I've structured my day around allowing myself a big meaty bratwurst in the evening. I went for the pickles and mustard and ketchup on the top.
A drizzle of mustard and a drizzle of ketchup.
You know, one bratwurst is enough. Although the problem is, you do start craving another one in about an hour's time, I find. And then, a bit like going round and round and round the track, I'm pretty confident that bratwurst will be repeating on you all evening and all night.
That's where the face masks come in handy. We're doing these writer interviews. They might not be able to hear us, but at least they can't smell our breath. I'm off now to get some frites, Lionel.
What are your first impressions, Richard? I know you've been here before, but back at the Ghent Six, what do you make of the evening so far?
There's such an air of familiarity about it all. There are restrictions. There are fewer people in the track centre. They're not serving beer in the track centre. Normally it's rammed in there. It's like the floor of a nightclub. It's not like that at all tonight. The stands are filling up quite nicely. There's usual food stalls, bars, backstage. And it all feels quite familiar, apart from the fact that everybody's wearing a mask. And then the riders themselves, you know, it's always really strange and a little jarring to walk into the track centre and just across the barrier there's, you know, Roger Kluger or Michael Morkov warming up. Michael Morkov, Olympic Madison champion and World Madison champion, wearing a World Championship Madison jersey that looks like a replica. Because he's riding here for Schneider Electric. It's just got a lovely kind of local homespun feel to it, the Ghent Six. You've got these big stars who, for a few days, race for Schneider Electric, and his jersey is flapping about. It looks not just like a replica, but a knockoff replica. It looks like a replica of a replica. It's terrible. It doesn't. I'd be surprised if I haven't checked, but if the colours are even in the right order, to be honest. But that's one of its charms, isn't it? There's a rough and readiness, a kind of. There isn't sawdust on the floor, but you feel like there should be sawdust on the floor.
Yeah, and there's a real sense of. They try to sort of build the anticipation, don't they? When we arrived in the track centre, the under 23 racing was still going on. And then they announce the teams, all 12 teams. They announce them one by one and they do a lap of the track and get a round of applause. Biggest cheer of the night. A real toss-up between Mark Cavendish and Ilhil Kayser. Obviously, Kayser, the hometown boy. Mark Cavendish has won here before. And Kenny De Ketteler, I thought a really nice touch. The introduction music for De Ketteler and his teammate was One More Time by Daft Punk. Because obviously this is De Ketteler's final Ghent Six of his career, so yeah, they've got a real idea of how to kind of build the suspense, and then the racing gets underway, and the first two races of the night are points races, 50 lap points races with a sprint every 10 laps. First of all, the riders with white numbers go, and then the riders with black numbers go. Each team has obviously a team of two riders, and they start accumulating points and trying to gain laps towards the, what is, on the face of it, quite a complicated competition. But the scoreboard is regularly updated, so you know exactly who's leading. And the racing now just basically goes on until 10:30, when the Belgian equivalent of, I don't know, the winner of The Voice will come on and entertain the crowd. Although sometimes it's a little bit more cabaret than that. We'll have to see what they've got in store.
There's such an air of familiarity about it. A lot of people still coming in the doors. Sadly, we don't have our Belgian belt correspondent with us to keep us updated on how many people are wearing belts. I'm not wearing a belt, but I wish I was, because my trousers keep falling down. So they do have their uses. But no, there's such an air of familiarity about it all. It's all the same people, isn't it? And you recognise the faces from all the Belgian races, even if they're not the same people. They're Belgian cycling fans who come out to all the classics, the 6-day races. I'm sure the cyclocross as well.
I am Ines.
From Belgium?
From Belgium.
Where do you live?
In Ghent.
So do you come to the Ghent 6 every year?
Yes, every year.
I notice you cheering for Kenny DeKethler. It's his last Ghent 6.
Yes.
Have you been fans of his for a long time?
Yes, in the beginning. On the first year. Yes.
So you've been following him a long time?
Yes.
So how does it feel to be here for his last Ghent 6?
Yes, it's very emotional. Yes.
Tell us about him. Why is he a favourite of yours?
My father knows him from a little boy, and that's why we follow him here in Ghent, yes.
What's it been like following him through his career? He's obviously mainly a track rider, mainly a 6-day rider. What's it been like being a fan of his?
I think he's the best wheelrider from
track specialist.
Yes, he's the best. Everyone says Ilio Kees is the best, but that's not true. Kenny DeKethler is the very best here. Yes, we know him. He was my nephew, so very good.
Tell me, what's your name?
Anton.
And are you a regular at the Ghent 6?
Yes. I think I come for 10 years or so.
What's special about the Ghent 6?
The crowd, also the mix between good cycling events and atmosphere is, it's just here again, because I follow cycling in general very close, but the Ghent 6 are something special in the gamma of cycling.
Is this the highlight of the year for you, do you think?
One of the highlights, yes.
Is there any riders that you're here, you know, that a lot of them are regulars here, but are any riders or teams that you're particularly drawn by here this year?
Yes, of course, Mark Cavendish is one a big name, but Tour Dens, I know his mom.
6-day racing for you what's the balance between entertainment and sport? Because entertainment is a big part of it. What's the kind of balance for you there?
For me, it's mainly sport. The best you can do at Ghent 6 days is come at Thursday or Saturday in the middle of the track and have a beer and have fun, and then on Sunday you have a seat and watch the race. But
that's when to watch it properly and pay attention.
Yeah, indeed.
Finally, I mean, we missed the Ghent 6 last year, of course. How does it feel this year? Does it feel like a normal Ghent 6 or a little bit different?
Yeah, between yesterday it felt normal, but now again the Corona shizzle is back on, so it was a little bit different. But when you're here, a beer at the track is the perfect match. Not too much, for me, not too much, just a few beers and watch cycling, that's awesome. And now we come to another place to have a beer.
You're a great guy. You're in the bar, you're in the right place. Obviously, you've got a beer in your hand. What are you going to be eating later on?
We say in Dutch, a vetschaf. It's a hamburger in our language from the town I come from. So yeah, an hamburger, obviously.
Well, enjoy the racing.
Yeah, thank you.
The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. And now you can wear the Super Sapiens Energy Band
the first and only wearable that can display real-time glucose data directly from Abbott's LibreSense Glucose Sport Biosensor. The Super Sapiens Energy Band is available at supersapiens.com for €159.
Well, we heard before the break there from some of the fans at the Ghent Six, and thank you very much indeed to Super Sapiens for their support of the Cycling Podcast. They are our title sponsor. We recently announced that four of our listeners had won 3 months' worth of Super Sapiens devices for continuous glucose monitoring. Earlier in the year, another winner was Fiona Bell. She won 3 months of Super Sapiens devices. And let's hear how she got on.
I turned 60 in July. And about a year ago, I thought it would be a great idea to enter a triathlon, which was called Castle to Coast. Cycling wasn't too much of a problem, but I needed to pick up the swimming and in particular running. And the problem with the running was I'd get to about running 14K and I would just poop. I would just be, I'd lose all energy, have to stop. So that was the reason why I entered the Super Sapiens competition, because I wanted to try and understand what was making that happen. And when I actually did the cycle, I was able to know that I had to have a little bit of something every 20 minutes. I sort of learned that. And my level was absolutely dead flat for the whole of that. For the run, which was the 14 miler, it suddenly turned really hot. And I have to say that my levels weren't quite so perfect for that. But at no stage did I run out of energy. I sort of learned enough that I could actually just keep going. What gave up was sort of my body rather than the actual sort of energy levels. But I completed it. Very, very hard work it was, but I got to the end.
En daar gaan we. Veel sportief geluk allemaal. A lot of joy, a lot of efforts also. We zijn eraan begonnen, dames en heren, aan deze zesdaagse.
Lionel, I've had a disaster.
What happened?
I spilled some mustard on my pale tan soft leather shoes.
Oh, I mean, that's almost as disastrous a footwear incident as when I ruined my Adidas Gazelles on the Pave in 2014. Very similar.
It'll go down in the annals of podcasting shoe history. I'm sure the mustard, it was sitting there for a long time before I spotted it as well. So lots of time for the greasiness to be absorbed.
They're ruined now, aren't they?
Wait, what happened in the racing there, Lionel?
Well, Richard, that was the flying lap. Each team put both their riders on the track. The first rider leads out the second and hand slings him into action for the final lap. And the quickest time was by Mark Hester, who's riding for Etix, a sponsor that everyone will know from their days sponsoring Mark Cavendish's road team. But as he said earlier, you know, they're not necessarily household names of cycling sponsorship, are they? It's a bit like when you play Football Manager on the computer and the names are artificially generated. As you say, Schneider Electric is a new one for me anyway.
He was riding Mark Hester with Tour Dens, who we heard earlier on from a fan of the Ghent Six of cycling, who's here from Antwerp, and he is a big favourite of his, Tour Dens, so he knows them from when he was small. He speaks to a lot of the Belgian fans, and they know someone from when they were small, don't they? So he's here supporting him. He'll be happy with that result. What have we got now?
Well, this is the first big Madison race, 40-minute Madison. And, well, it's like a Madison in the World Championships. They hand-sling one another into the action every 2.5-3 laps. And first over the line wins, as simple as that. And then after the break, there's a couple of 60-lap journey races, which works out at about 10 kilometres. But with half the riders on the track, all with a motorcycle pacer, that's a real high-octane event.
We're standing in the very worst place, of course, to follow a Madison. We're in the track centre, where you risk doing your neck an injury, trying to sort of follow what's going on. And especially on this small track, it's very, very difficult. Interestingly, the fan I mentioned earlier told us earlier that he likes to come and stand in the track centre Thursdays, Fridays, Saturday evenings, enjoy the party, and then on Sunday, the final day, he goes and sits in the stand so he can watch the racing properly when it's all
decided. So a useful tip there for anybody planning to come and watch the six-day racing.
Of course, because the track is so tight, it can be quite easy for teams to lose laps, and that's already happened here, Rich. Four teams are a lap up on everybody else, and getting those laps back is difficult. It, you know, it's easy to lose them, but hard to regain them.
Mark Cavendish, Lionel, it's always so surprising to people when they see him sprinting at the Tour de France and being the fastest rider there. And on the track, you don't get that same electrifying turn of speed, that same acceleration. We saw him in the flying lap there, a good half second off the fastest time. I hope it's not going to be like the sixth day was it in 2008 when he rode here, got in a bit of trouble from Patrick Sercu, the organiser, for not really being in shape.
I'll tell you what, Richard, I'll tell you that story on the way out.
Okay, Lionel, excellent. One little thing about Mark Cavendish, there's no news yet about his new contract with Quickstep, as they will be next year. But we understand that he will be with the team next year. He's going on the training camp that's coming up, so he's definitely going to be part of that team. But there's been no announcement yet of his new contract, and I would have assumed they'd be planning to announce it this week. He's riding here for the Wolfpack, which is obviously a reference to the nickname that the team used. But I'm not sure if it will be announced this week or not. It may be, it may not be, but he will be a De Koenig Quickstep or Quickstep rider next year. Michael Jackson, Lionel, you usually swing your hips to a bit of Michael Jackson. I can see you there.
No, I'm just shaking some mustard off my shoe.
Cavendish. Het schuifje, daar gaan we terug. Ivo Kessen, Mark Cavendish.
What's your name?
Mario.
And where are you from, Dario?
I live 20 km from here in Danger.
And you're wearing a sweatshirt that announces you as a Mark Cavendish fan.
Yeah, met him the first time in Roubaix in 2007. And since then we follow every other Tour de France. We follow Mark, so he knows us very well.
And have you been against six before?
Yeah.
You must be happy that the race is back on.
Yeah. Because we have some difficult years with Corona. But we follow every other Tour de France. So we are very happy because Mark, on Wednesday after the Tour de France, he came to Deinze to meet us with Peter and his four children. So that was the deal for life.
You paying attention here, Lionel?
I am, yes.
What's happening?
Well, now there are four of the 12 teams have lost a lap, at least, and so it's a sort of whittling down process at the moment. That's what will happen. The intensity will go up over the course of the race. There's still 28 minutes to go, so they've only been racing 12 minutes. And somebody's putting the pressure on at the front. In fact, it's Moorkoff and Hansen who are up there pushing the pace on. But in fact, Viergaarder and Hester have gained a lap on everybody, so shuffles everybody down the ranking one place.
Making this race even more complicated is that the shortness of the track makes it, in inverted commas, easier to take a lap, and so there's, and especially as the race goes on, the riders get more tired, you do see teams taking laps more often than you do in championship Madisons.
Yeah, of course. A big difference, isn't it, gaining 166 metres compared to 250. But it is tricky. If you take your eyes off the front of the race, you can completely lose what's actually going on. So the scoreboard's actually really helpful because you can then reorientate who's in front, pick them out, right, that's the front of the race, and everybody else is chasing them.
Well, your job, Lionel, is to keep your eyes in the front of the race. Mine is to get the mustard off my shoes.
Vergaat de Hesters en Rika Dirje.
you can tell from the commentator when something of importance is happening. Kenny De Ketelaere's team and Sylvain Dillier's team have both gained a lap as well. So now there's three teams out in front. But as I'm watching them, Richard, it just strikes me as remarkable how they find the space on the track to do the hand sling changeovers, swinging up the track to take their little bit of breather from the action down below. I mean, I don't want to tempt fate, but with so much movement going on the track, it is incredible that there aren't more collisions. I mean, there hasn't been a crash this evening so far, and the racing has been intense. It's such a skillful thing.
There are some top lead-out men here, aren't there? Roger Kluge, maybe not so much as he has been in the past, but he has been a great lead-out man in his career. Jasper De Boost has done a job for Caleb Ewan as well. And, of course, Michael Markov, the maestro of the lead-out men. And we often marvel at his ability in a fun sprint to be so calm, so smooth, so apparently aware of everything that's going on around him. And, you know, he talks about the track and how the track is where he's developed and honed these skills, and it's apparent here, obviously. I mean, he just coasts around, doesn't he? He always seems to be in quite a low gear, spinning away. He doesn't look like a really powerful rider, but he's as fast as most of these guys here. And yeah, this is where he hones those skills as a lead-out man, which we see to such great effect in the Tour de France and other races.
The volgende poging van Michelis Cavendini stond nog op het WK podium in de ploegkoers daar op dat WK in Roubaix.
Update, Lionel.
Well, an update now is three teams one lap ahead, including Mark Cavendish and Ilho Kaiser. But it's a fluid situation. It's changing all of the time. We're roughly halfway through now, so this is the business end of the race. But as I said, it's the teams at the bottom that are slipping out of contention, two and four laps behind, whereas everyone that's still a lap down or just a lap down will obviously have the opportunity to get back on terms.
We zijn in het tweede wedstrijdgedeelte. Het was een wedstrijd over 40 minuten. We zijn de kant van half wedstrijd voorbij. We hebben op. Slot over de synchronisers. Dan ken je de kinderen en roeiers. Marco Hansen in de lobby. Ze gaan het team op sprint aan de aankomst. Aantal de beste beweging hebben gedacht. Er zijn nog drie ronden af te werken. Het hele team, alleen de kampioen,
Well, the race is really on here, Lionel. We've got Kenny De Ketelaere on the attack with his partner Robbie Pace, with Markov and Hansen in hot pursuit.
Yeah, Markov just getting across to the back wheel now. One lap to go. It couldn't be closer here. There's the bell. They're side by side. A hand sling puts Geist back in. That is a heck of a turn by Markov. Wow. Well, Lassie Norman Hansen that was, sorry. No. Sorry, I was right the first time. That was Markov in the sprint there. Lassie Norman Hansen's just gone round at the bottom. Looked absolutely cooked. But very good, very entertaining win that.
Markov and Hansen take it from De Ketelaere. He's with Klug and De Boost third. Reichardt and Dillier, Kaiser and Cavendish.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by the Hammerhead Karoo 2 cycle computer. Richard and I have been riding in Belgium a couple of times while we've been here, and we've been riding with some locals, so I've just been following the wheels. I haven't had to plot my route on the Karoo 2, but it's been nice to come back and then know that my ride is automatically uploaded to the Hammerhead dashboard and that links automatically to my Strava account. But when I've been riding at home, I found that the mapping and the routing and particularly the climber feature on the Karoo 2 has really come into its own and added a different dimension to some of my riding. Over the past few weeks, I've been building a database of my regular rides, either by importing routes, you can import from Strava or Komoot or anything that uses a GPX file or similar, or my favourite is actually just drawing my own routes on the Hammerhead dashboard. It's as simple as point and click, and then it seamlessly uploads to the Karoo 2 computer. And so when I'm ready to go out, I'll pick a ride based on how long I've got to spare, maybe a 30k ride or a 50k ride, depending on what I want to do. And then when I'm out on the road, the turn-by-turn directions are not necessarily that important because I know the roads like the back of my hand, although, of course, if I was riding somewhere less familiar, they'd be invaluable. But what I've really been enjoying is the climber feature, which tells you how far there is to go to the next climb. And then when you're on the climb, it gives you the gradient changes in real time. So you know the steep bits coming up, you know how far there is to the top. And this has been developed in collaboration with some of the world's best climbers, including Israel Startup Nation rider Michael Woods, who, unlike me, is a pretty handy climber. I'm a bit of a slow coach when it comes to going uphill. So it's the countdown to the summit that I really enjoy. The screen itself is really clear, really easy to see at a glance, taking what is quite a lot of information, but without, you know, taking your eyes off the road for too long. It's a little bit like having a personalised Tour de France road book for your own roads on the screen in front of you. And I've been really enjoying using it. And I'm looking forward to venturing further afield and challenging the routing. I've given it a couple of little tests by deliberately going off course and seeing if it can easily find its way back onto the right route. And so far, the Karoo 2 has proved to be smarter than me. So looking forward to taking it further afield and putting it through its paces. Now, if you like the sound of all of that, for a limited time, Hammerhead has an incredible deal. You can buy a Karoo 2 at hammerhead.io/trade and get up to $170 or £125 or the equivalent, wherever you are, when you trade in your current cycling computer. That's a rebate of up to $170 or £125 when you trade up to a Karoo 2 from Hammerhead by trading in your current cycling computer. But this is a limited time offer, so go to hammerhead.io/trade and trade in your current cycle computer for a Karoo 2 today. Now back to the track in Ghent, and at the interval, the cycling takes a back seat while the cabaret or the singers take centre stage. They move around the track entertaining the crowd. I have to say, because there's no beer being served in the centre of the track, it did seem like the velodrome emptied out a little bit as perhaps people headed to the bar to get a beer in the catacombs, as they call them, round the outside of the track. Anyway, this gave Richard and I an opportunity to speak to some of the riders in the track centre. And first up, Richard spoke to Michael Morkoff, the Danish rider who is riding here with his World and Olympic Madison champion partner, Lasse Norman Hansen. Morkoff really cut his teeth on the track, very experienced track rider, and of course, lead out man extraordinaire for De Koninck Quickstep, having worked with all sorts of sprinters, including Mark Cavendish. So Richard had a chat with Michael Morkoff about being back on the track in Ghent.
That was a very exciting race we saw there, and a nice win.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a bit curious to be back here in Køge. I was last time here 6 years ago, where I won together with Ilio. It's a very special track. Usually we race on tracks of 250 meters. So this is almost like a half distance. So it's a really technical, demanding track.
And you're wearing the world champion's jersey. It's been an amazing year for you as a teammate at the Tour de France, we saw again. But then to go on from that to the Olympics and the world championships, you must reflect on what's been your best ever season, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. When I joined Quickstep in 18, I did at that point my best season so far. And since then, I've been able to top it up every year. And I'm indeed very proud of what I achieved this year. First in the spring with Sam, and then a really historical Tour de France with Cav. And then obviously my Olympic gold medal and World Championships title. Yeah, it's just been extraordinary.
What do you put that down to, that improvement in your own condition, your own performances? What's the reason?
Well, I believe that I managed at a quite a late age still to search for improving myself, and I'm really perfectionistic, so even though that I did do good lead outs in the past, I'm not resting on those. I want to improve and I want to do it even better. So I always happens to find the motivation in something.
Where can you improve as a lead out man?
Well, it never really goes perfect, so there's always room for improvements. And obviously next year I get the chance to ride again with Fabio, who looks extraordinarily good. And at this moment I'm really excited to race with him next year.
Are you somebody who watches sprints back on video to analyze them after the event?
Absolutely, I look a lot of sprints. I also enjoy to watch the sprints when I'm not in a race myself and try to analyze what's going on. And I think that's a very important part of my job.
And how nice is it to be back in Ghent after a while, you said? I mean, it's the first Ghent for a couple of years. We've got quite a full house tonight, actually.
Yeah.
What have you made of the atmosphere so far?
Well, as a rider, I absolutely love to be here. Also, as a rider, I love to race in Belgium if it's on the track, on the road, but you really feel the heart of cycling is here. And this is a very iconic 6 days race. Every night sold out. And to be able to wear the World Championship stripes here, it's a really proud moment for me. And when I got the chance to ride, I didn't hesitate.
And you're riding with Lasse Norman Hansen. You've obviously got a great partnership with him. Is that a partnership you think will continue next year and even beyond?
Yeah, well, Lasse is still young. He's a bit younger than me. I think in a year or two, I'm going to look how it looks for the Olympics. And then for sure it's possible to carry on with Lasse.
Paris is a possibility.
What?
Paris is a possibility.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess next year you mentioned riding with Fabio. I think he's going to be the guy at the Tour de France. That's the plan anyway. You've done the job with so many different sprinters. With him, will it be a case of trying to get as many races before the Tour as possible, or does that not matter so much?
Oh, well, my focus is going to be straight away from the start of the season to try to get a good rhythm with Fabio and to win races. And hopefully we can win some races before looking to the Tour de France. And yeah. We have to find each other.
But first, before that, you're the favourites here in Ghent, apparently.
Yeah, I think we are up there. It's always a very strong field here. Obviously, I know Kenny is going to ride his last race here, so he's very motivated. So is Ilio. And yeah, heaps of other guys, so it's going to be a good battle.
Well, I'll let you go and enjoy the halftime entertainment.
Yeah, thanks.
When Morkov last won the Ghent 6, he was partnering Ilio Kaisa, the home favourite. Kaisa's father owned a bar in the centre of town, and Kaisa is the hometown hero. And Kaisa himself is partnering Mark Cavendish this time. So Richard also spoke to him.
What's it like to be back at the Ghent 6?
Feels quite good. I was a bit afraid. We had a general repetition in Copenhagen, which wasn't super good. And then also last week with the measurements for Corona that changed everything a little bit. But in the end, I feel good to be back. There's a lot of people. There's some there's good atmosphere as well. So, yeah, really nice. Better than expected.
I think, yeah, although there are the measures, it feels like a good crowd for an opening night.
Yeah. Normally, Tuesday is always not the best night during the week. It's actually the worst night of the week. And it's, for me, it's a bit like other years. I thought there would be more people that wouldn't show up, but in the end, people that bought a ticket, they are here, I think.
I read this week that you said people still know you or call you a trackie, but you don't ride much on the track these days. How much riding on the track have you done to get ready for this?
After the road season, I didn't rest. I did 2-3 weeks of training on the track, and then I did 3 days of Copenhagen racing. Now I do this, and then maybe I will do one more race at the end of the year. So that's it. The last years, it's always been 1 6-day and 1 or 2 6-days, and then some small races. So I do 75, 80 races on the road, and 6 till 12 days more or less on the track. So I'm not a track rider anymore. Track cycling has changed a lot the last 5 years, and I didn't go with that. So for me, it's always a big shock to come against, to race against the real trackies.
What's it like riding with Mark, and what kind of shape is he in?
Well, I was a bit afraid after Copenhagen, which wasn't really good. I expected more from that. But actually, I feel good with him today here, and he also looked really good in the race. He was good after the race, so he has a high morale. He's feeling good, he's smiling, which is important, and I'll try to do the same.
And I spoke to a young man making his senior debut at the Ghent 6, Michael Szilard. Now, if you're a keen student of Ghent 6 track cycling, the surname Szilard may ring some bells, because his grandfather, Joop, was one of the most famous Derny riders, a real larger-than-life character on the track at the 6 days, has been a Derny rider for some of the greats over the years. But Michael Szilard is riding here as a senior for the first time.
So we're watching the Derny race here, and you have a special connection to the Derny, I guess, because of your grandfather.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my grandfather used to ride here a lot, and now my father as well. So, yeah, you can say it's in the family.
But they're Derny riders and you're a cyclist.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I'm more athletic than my dad. No, but... They're doing it a long time already, and cycling is just in the family as well. So I start as a cyclist, and who knows what brings the future.
Do you remember watching your grandfather here?
Yeah, I can still remember him riding here, and it was always great to see him. And but now it's also great to see my dad here. It's making me very proud of him.
And what about your race? Is this your first time in the Elite Ghent 6?
Yeah, so I used to ride here one time, like 5 years ago, the U23 race. But I gotta be honest, it's a very special feeling to be able to start the Elite 6 here.
And how do you and your partner go around building up a partnership in the racing? Because you have to hit the ground running on the first night, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've known each other for quite some time now, and... I think there's a good connection between us two, but then it's still getting used to each other a bit. I think our handling is pretty good, and I think we're pretty good connected. But again, this track here is 160 meters, so it's already hard to use the track, but we're getting there, and it's getting good.
Do you have a favorite event of the night?
Honestly, I think the entire night is special. Especially since it's back after last year cancellation. So, I think the entire night is something special.
Will you be doing the Derny race that comes up a bit later on?
No, my partner's doing it. I'll do it tomorrow.
And who's your Derny driver?
It's going to be Edwin Smilders tomorrow. But I hope this week I can ride with my father one time.
Well, that was Michael Szilard, a real family affair here in Ghent. His grandfather and his father, Derny drivers. He's obviously racing on the track as a cyclist. But as I say, a real family feel to this, because the race director now is Christophe Surcoux, the son of record 11-time winner Patrick Surcoux, who was the race director here for many years, who passed away in early 2019, and so the 2019 edition of the Ghent 6 was the first without Patrick Surcoux as the race director for many years. During the break, Richard, while you were watching the entertainment and listening to the music, I had a word with Christophe Surcoux about where the Ghent 6 sits in the calendar of track racing, and particularly how he sees the arrival of the Champions League. So tell me, how important is it to get the Ghent 6 back on this year after missing last year because of COVID?
Well, it's very important. An event that has been away for more than 1 year, it's never good for the event, so it's very good that we can organise again. Of course, it's with restricted measures that we have to follow. that the government has imposed to us as organizers, so we fully do that. But anyhow, we are very satisfied that the event can go on.
How does it feel to you? Because to me, it feels like a normal Tuesday night. The crowd in the center of the track is just as big. It's still early, so it's not raucous yet, but it seems just the only difference is that everyone is wearing a mask.
Yeah, well, everybody is wearing a mask, but also the fact that there is no bar at the inner field, so you cannot drink anything, you cannot bring drinks from outside or from the grandstands to the infield. You cannot consume drinks or food in the grandstand, so that's a big difference. You can drink something here, but more in the surrounding corridors of the track. But it's a difference, yes. Also wearing the face mask, it's a difference for the event, but we are satisfied.
Now you have a very famous name, Surcoux, particularly in this building. Do you remember watching your father race here in the Ghent 6?
Yes, of course. I was 13 years old when he stopped racing. So when you're a kid from 9, 10, 11, 12 years, you have memories of that. So not only from here in Ghent, but also for the other 6 days where he has raced and where I was accompanying him as a kid. So yes, of course, I have good memories of that.
And how do you feel following in his footsteps as the director of the race?
I have been involved with the event since I was 17 or 18 years in different roles here. So I travel a lot with my dad. We were along very much together through the 6 days, but also to other races. And we talked a lot. And of course, yeah, with his illness, the last 2 years, two, 3 years of his life, he couldn't do the same thing anymore as he was used to do. So I quite of rolled a little bit in that function, which wasn't new for me. I knew what it was. I've been in track cycling for all my life. But then, of course, when he passed away, I had to really take it over. And now it's I think the second time that I'm the responsible of the event. But it's not something new for me.
I can't help but notice you stand in the same position that your father used to stand in, right next to the finish line, just keeping an eye on all of the racing.
Well, you have to keep an eye. Also, you talk with the commissaires. We have a new scoreboard tonight, so it's the first time that you use. I think it's a very big step upwards with the new scoreboard. But of course, first night, you know, you always have to look a little bit and adjust a little bit here and there. But we cope very well, I think.
One of the riders, I think it was Havik, was having a word with you just as he came off after the last Madison. What was he saying? He didn't look too happy.
Well, when you look at the scoreboard after the first Madison, he is at -4 laps, so you can imagine that he's not so happy.
What was he actually complaining about?
Well, complaining, he wasn't complaining about the organisation, but yeah, he said, yeah, it doesn't go like it has to go. We are one of the favourites for the race. Yeah, being at four laps after the first Madison, it's not so good.
What about the lineup you have this year? Because obviously Kenny De Ketelaer, big favourite, this is his last Ghent 6. Mark Cavendish, of course, adds that star quality from the road. How important is it when you're putting the field together that you have that mix of riders?
Well, when you're making the field, you want to have, first of all, the best track riders, the best 6 day Madison riders on the track. You want to have the best Belgium riders, but also the best international riders. And I think the field that we could present this time is really the best that you can put together. We have the world champions, the Olympic champions, the European champions. We have Kenny De Ketelaer, Ilio Case. I can name them all, but it's not only on the top too. Also, when you see with the young guys that you're given the opportunity to come here, when you see you have some good Belgium, you have Dillier who is back, we have Malmberg, young guy, but I think in the future will be a very good one. So it's a very good mixture of young and old, experienced, non-experienced, big names, smaller names, but smaller names with high potential for the future.
What do you think about the developments in track cycling? We've seen the new Champions League come along. Which is that a threat to the Ghent 6 day? Because the 6 day season in itself is shrinking. It's down to, I think, three events, a couple in Germany, and then maybe the 4 days of Geneva, I think it is. I mean, how do you assess the track calendar at the moment and the Ghent 6 place in it?
Well, I would prefer that there also would be some more 6 days organized, because when you have a lot of 6 days, certain track riders specialist can make a living out of it, which is now very difficult if you're not in a road team that supports you, or if you're not supported by a national federation because you're participating at World Cups, World Championships, Olympic Games. It's difficult to make a living out of it. So the new format of the Track Champions League, I don't see it as a threat at all. On the contrary, the more track races there are, the better for everyone, also for us. Of course, it's a different format. It's a format based on television, short numbers. It has to go very fast. 6 days is a little bit different. I see it more that the Champions League, there are the one-day races of track cycling, and six-day racing is more that the stage races of track cycling.
What about the program you have here? I mean, it seems like it hasn't changed from decades. You know, the same format of the Madison Chase races and the long journey races, and then the flying time trials. Have you ever, you know, in the time you've been looking at it, the last 2 years or so, have you thought about changing the format in any ways, or is there something about the 6 day that just has to stay as it is?
Well, the format hasn't changed since the last 8-9 years. When you look back 20-25 years ago, it was a different format. It were more long chases. I remember there were chases of 100k, 2 hour chases. This changed. The last 7-8 years, the format that we now have is long Madisons, but not over long Madisons. It has to stay attractive for the public too. Combined with spectacular shorter numbers, when you see the team elimination, how the riders ride, how important that they found that, how prestigious that they found that. So it changed a little bit, but I think the format that we found, let's say, maximum 10 years ago, is a very good format. It's very well liked by the riders. It's very much liked, appreciated by the public. So why should we change that?
And lastly, what about the inclusion of the women's events? Because you've got an Omnium Day, I think, on Saturday, but there's women's racing on the final 3 days. But do you feel you still have more to do in terms of offering the women riders a more equal challenge to the one that the men face?
Well, we started, I think, 5 or 6 years ago with organising women's racing, which was a good thing to do. So we do on the Friday a points race, we do on the Saturday an Omnium with 12 riders, and then on the Sunday a record attempt. Maybe ideal would be in the future to be able to organise also a Madison race during the 6 day for women. But I think that the technical level of enough women's riders to race on Kuipke track, which is a 166 metre track, There just aren't enough women to do a Madison race for 6 days at our track. Maybe on bigger tracks, 250 meters, that would be possible in the future, and I hope so here too. But I think we still have to wait a little longer to do really Madison races here on the track in Ghent.
You're not going to know though unless you give them the opportunity to have a go at racing at, you know, an elite level on a track like this.
Well, we did it. The first year we had a Madison women's race with only 7 teams here, and there were already 2 crashes. So we follow it, we don't exclude it, and maybe in the future we will organise it. But now we limit it to the points race and to an Omnium in our event.
Take it all back, Rich. I mean, that was just a race. That was just a journey race. And I love the fact that the journey driver punches the air just as vehemently as the winning rider, who on that occasion, Kenny De Ketelo, bowing
out.
Would you believe it? I mean, would you?
Yuri Havik led for most of the race, but Kenny De Ketelo is the winner in the end with a late charge. Didn't see that coming at all. It's his final Ghent 6. He's got a lot of support here. He's a very, very popular rider indeed here with the local crowd. So, well, they'll be thrilled by that, won't they?
Yeah, it was interesting. In my conversation with Christophe Surcou, I referenced the little exchange that went on between Havik and Surcou at the end of the final race of the first half. And Havik didn't look terribly happy. And my Surcou didn't really explain what had gone on, but I do think that the riders feel a lot of pressure to perform and not fall several laps behind early on. I mean, they lost 4 laps in the first Madison. That's going to be very hard to to catch up. And well, Patrick Surcoux, when he ran this race, he did run it with an iron fist. He expected particularly the highest paid stars to perform and be competitive at the top end of the standings. And well, that leads me nicely on to my little story about Mark Cavendish, which I'll tell you, Richard, on our way out of the velodrome later.
Well, Lionel, what have we got now?
We've got the Super Sprint. Now, this is one that I have to see it to remember the format. So, we've got all 12 riders on the track here. Well, or rather, we've got a rider from each team on the track here. And they're cycling round and round the track.
Oh, wow. It's insight like that you came here for. The Super Sprint, is that, it's just a sprint that's super. I mean, it continues the trend in cycling to just add super. So you've got Super Planche de Belfi next year. You're listening to the Super Cycling Podcast.
Sponsored by Super Sapiens.
Oh, yes, and this is the Super Sprint.
More as we have it.
Well, Morse and Lewis, Crockett and Tubbs, Cagney and Lacey here have worked it out. It's basically an elimination race, isn't it?
It is, with a super sprint at the end. They're coming up to the line now. Last over the line will be eliminated. Ooh, close.
Lassie Norman Hansen, first rider to be eliminated. One of the world Madison champions, of course. And yeah, I mean, it's a race with more names than something else with lots of names. It's the Devil Take the Hindmost, it's the elimination race, and now it's the Super Sprint as well. I guess what we're going to see here is a bigger group at the end contest the sprint.
Yeah, they don't eliminate all the riders, I think. It's whittled down to a final sprint, I think, of six, I think.
I mean, if they eliminated all the riders, then nobody would win.
A new format of cycling.
Well, we've been whittled down to six riders final, and they will contest Super Sprint. We're into the final 10 laps, well, 3 laps to go now. Mark Cavendish is there, looking pretty good. Jasper de Vust is there, a few others.
Who's your money on? Cavendish is getting a lot of mention from the commentator. That's sometimes a clue as to what they're expecting to happen. But here we go, final lap, there's the bell.
Jules Hesters, the winner. I mean, he took a bit of a flyer, and it's pretty hard to close these gaps on this tight track. So Mark Cavendish fourth across the line there. Didn't see a lot of changes in position, did we, towards the end? It was a fast race. Even after all the riders had been eliminated, who were going to be eliminated, it turned into almost more like a scratch race than a sprint. But there we go. Another race finishes. And another one will be back on the track in a few seconds.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport, our longtime supporter. Grateful to them for their support. And if you would like 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceandsport.com and at the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Now back to the Ghent 6.
I'm John, friend of the podcast.
John, you just came and introduced yourself, said hello to Lionel and to me, Daniel.
Oh, Richard, of course, yeah. sorry about that. No offense, no offense.
What are you doing here? I mean, have you come over, or do you live over here?
No. I've visited. I'm from London. I've come over for a couple of days just for the Gen 6 day. It's great. I'm loving it.
Are you over for a few days?
Yeah. Just a couple more days. Yeah.
Cool. Seeing you again. Got your bike?
No, I haven't got a bike. I'm all walking this time. Yeah.
Is it your first time here?
Yeah, it's great. I think Ghent's like the best of Belgium. Like, it's got all the nice architecture, it's got old Flandrian, nice food, nice beer, it's got everything you want.
What are your impressions of the Ghent 6? How does it match up to your expectations?
It's very chaotic. It's not what I was expecting at all. But it's great. It's a great atmosphere. Yeah. It's really nice, and it's great to see Cavendish here as well. Yeah, I hope he does well this week.
You're in the track centre here. Is it better down here or in the seats?
I think it's better down here for the atmosphere, but you get really dizzy after a while, so it's a mixed bag, really.
Have you managed to get close to any of the riders to speak to them?
No, I got quite close to Michael Morkov earlier and Ilo Kaiser. But that's it. The rest of them I haven't really seen much of.
Well, listen, enjoy your time here. Enjoy the racing, and thanks for being a friend of the podcast.
That's all right. Thank you. Thanks for the great episode.
Well, Richard, we've come up into the seat above one of the corners on the bend. Michael Morkov has been caught in this journey race and overtaken by Roger Kluger, but I tell you what, my money is on Ilo Kaiser in this one.
Well, great insight, Lionel. 14 laps to go. I have to say, fantastic up here, isn't it? You get a really great view of the race. You don't have to crane your neck. You can just sit here and watch the whole thing unfolding in front of you, and it's a great vantage point from up here.
Kaiser's got to make his move shortly, though. The gaps are opening up, but I still think he's going to do it. You can tell when the Derny drivers mean business. He's putting a bit of a spurt on Kaiser's rider there. Look.
Yeah, they move up the banking a bit, and yeah, there's a bit of, you can see them communicating with each other a bit more. The Derny driver's turning around, just checking that Kaiser's okay with the increased pace, and it's closing up, isn't it? They're all going faster, but the gaps are closing.
8 laps to go now. Kaiser still in 4th place behind Morkov, Kluger still out in front. Oh, it's going to be a thriller. Morkov making another move. Here goes Kaiser. This is it. The move high up the banking over the outside. Into second place. Morkov still out in the lead. Three laps to go. The crowd are really getting into it as well. They can sense the home win here, Richard. Crowd tells you who won, Richard. Ilo Kaiser there. But what about Morkov? I mean, he was out of the saddle at one point, sprinting on the back of a Derny bike. I mean, That was extraordinary to
Never
see.
Seen Michael Moore come out of the saddle before.
I know, he doesn't even get out of the saddle in the Tour de France.
Never. Well, Lionel, back through the thick fog of bratwurst and other fried meats and back into the freezing cold night after a very entertaining evening's racing. We were watching the Derny race there. Ilya Kajsa just beat Michael Morkov, and I think there was maybe a bit of skepticism from us about the legitimacy of the result. But, you know, it was exciting to watch. It was a very fast race. Kajsa came from behind. There's a huge amount of theatre, not in all the races, but in some of them for sure. There is theatre in it, but the crowd were happy. It was exciting to watch. It was actually quite thrilling. I found myself getting really into it, and everybody's happy.
It was a terrific evening's entertainment. And I mean, it's not over yet. We're leaving. It's around about, it's coming up to quarter to midnight here, but they've got another hour of racing to do. Little bit past my bedtime now, but that was an absolutely phenomenal evening cycling. And actually, I thought that the night might lose some of the unique Ghent atmosphere because the bars aren't situated in the centre of the track and people can't take drinks into the seats. But actually, I felt it was a bit more civilised than normal, particularly as the evening went on. But I actually felt that it threw the focus much more firmly on the racing for the crowd that were watching. And I mean, the racing didn't disappoint. It was an absolutely terrific evening. And, well, we've met a friend of the podcast. We've had a hot dog. We've seen some great racing. We've spoken to some riders. We've spoken to the race organiser, and I've been giving this Mark Cavendish story quite a build-up that I'm not
looking
sure,
forward to this.
That I'm not sure it deserves. But let's go back to 2007. Mark Cavendish was coming to the end of his first year as a fully fledged pro on the road. He'd ridden the first couple of weeks of the Tour de France, hadn't he? And then pulled out. He was a former Madison World Champion, of course. He won that title in 2005 with Rob Hales, and he paired up with Bradley Wiggins, who was probably a tier above Cavendish in the sort of pecking order of Ghent Six riders, because Wiggins had won it with Matt Gilmore a few years earlier in 2003, I think. But Wiggins and Cavendish wanted to ride it together. Partly because they were two British riders who had their eye on the Madison at the World Championships the following year and the Olympic Games, of course, in Beijing. Anyway, Cavendish wasn't going too well on the first couple of nights. And we heard from Christoph Surcu, who seemed slightly more mild-mannered, perhaps, than his father, who was a real taskmaster when it came to the level that he expected the riders to perform at. And Cavendish and Wiggins were losing laps, and Cavendish, to put it bluntly, wasn't going terribly well. And Surcu had a habit of telling the press this, and so there was a bit of a story and some quotes from Surcu saying he was disappointed about Cavendish's level. And I followed this up. I was working for Cycling Weekly at the time, and spoke to Rod Ellingworth, who was Cavendish's coach but was here with the under-23 riders. And Ellingworth said, well, yeah, but, you know, these are really demanding style of racing, and Cavendish has taken a break after the road season. He's had a little holiday, and you know, he's just getting back into things before the winter training for the next road season. So I wrote a piece for Cycling Weekly which didn't have a byline on it. The gist of it was, or there was a line in it, you know, after Surcu's quotes and after some quotes from Cavendish, basically saying that after the season Cavendish had had and the unexpected fortnight at the Tour de France, you couldn't begrudge him a holiday. Well, Cavendish took exception to this, but because he didn't know who had written it, he blamed one of my colleagues. And, well, for, 14 years, I've kept my head down.
You didn't put him right on that.
I haven't put him right on that. But I still stand by that. I mean, you know, the road riders in particular are doing long seasons, and then they're racing at that intensity for that length of time for six nights. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a big ask.
All water under the bridge now, I'm sure. Anyway, as you say, a very, very enjoyable evening's racing. As you say, we met a friend of the podcast on our way out there. We heard from him and came across on the spur of the moment. Had a spare week and thought he would pop across. And that's how easy it is. And, it's easy to
to go to the Ghent Six and have one, two, three, four, five, or six evenings entertainment. And it's highly recommended.
We're walking the wrong way back to the car, aren't we? Because, of course, it's over there.
Walking back to the car.
We're not walking back to the car. Or if we are, we're going to have to go in a big U shape. So I suggest we turn around and go that way. I mean, it's easy to come out of the Ghent 6 track and feel a little bit disorientated and dizzy after swivelling round and round in the track centre all night.
One thing that interests me is the rider's routine. You know, after racing until 1:30 in the morning, it must be very difficult to come down from that and get to sleep. And I imagine you wouldn't be getting sleep before 3, 4, maybe even 5 o'clock and waking up, I guess, at lunchtime. We know that the stories of yore of riders sleeping in their cabins at the track and racing much longer hours, but I wonder for the modern 6-day rider what the routine is like. That might be something that's worth looking at for the future. But we'll maybe be back here next year, because there aren't many 6 days left on the calendar, unfortunately, but this one is a real institution, well worth a visit. So we hope you've enjoyed our episode from the Ghent 6. Next week, we begin our series of episodes looking back on the season. Next week, we'll be looking back on the classics from this year. And over the following weeks, we'll be doing the Grand Tours. We'll have a press conference episode. We'll look at some riders who are retired at the end of this year. And that's all coming up. And then over Christmas, for friends of the podcast, the Christmas selection box between Christmas and New Year, a series of connected or not connected episodes by myself, Lionel, Daniel, and the three of us together. Just a little Christmas treat for friends of the podcast. A reminder that before the 1st of December, you can sign up as a friend of the podcast for £15. That price is frozen until the 1st of December, and then it goes up to £20. But existing friends of the podcast, when they renew over the next year, the price will stay the same at £15. And for our higher-paying, more generous friends of the podcast, who we massively appreciate, they pay £50 or £100 a year. That price remains the same. That price is frozen. So if you are a £50 or £100 friend of the podcast, that remains the same. And if you are, you will get a gift once again next year. We've got a new gift for the higher-paying members of the podcast. Details about that to come. Any other news, Lionel? We've got an episode of Service Course this week. We've had another episode of Explore this week with Adam Bowie, our producer, with a remarkable personal story.
No, the big news is we are now heading in the right direction. We're going towards where the car is parked, which is a great relief.
Well, let's head there then. Thanks very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
To become a friend of the podcast or to sign up for our weekly newsletter, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. Our theme music is by Glass Pear, and this episode was produced by Hugh Owen.